So my name's Sabrina George. Welcome
That's
to Secrets of...
it's true, actually.
I want to buzz her up straight away.
It's true that it's a lie. I changed it by default.
Did you? What was it?
Yeah. It only cost £25 to
really?
Change it. Yeah, I keep telling people. It's a very useful thing to know. Right, so let's introduce ourselves. Juliet, would you like to introduce yourself, where your show is and what you're doing in your show?
Right, my name is Julia. I'm in the Great Australian Showcase over at Stand 2, 9:30 every night. And we are three Australian comedians who are just doing 20 minutes each and entertaining audiences all around Edinburgh.
And you're selling out to full houses?
Yeah, it's been excellent, actually.
Really good.
It's really unusual for me to do a festival and actually make some money. It's kind of a strange experience. So far I've done a Melbourne Fringe, two Melbourne Comedy Festivals and two Edinburgh Comedy Festivals and, well, Fringe Festival. That's just really odd to be, like, tallying up numbers at the end of the day and going, hang on, that's in
There's
my favour.
3p left over.
That doesn't make sense.
And are you going back to Melbourne directly after this? You're going
around
town?
I'm a London person these days.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Mm. And Shazza, just in case anybody doesn't know... about yourself, Joe.
Pleasant.
10:30.
My show's at 10:15 in the Pleasant Stone. And I don't use a microphone, which is why I'm using this.
Oh, really?
It's very intimate, you see. And it's at 10:15 every night.
And is it doing well?
Yeah. It's been sold out every night since I got here.
Almost impossible to get a ticket. Fantastic. And what are you going to do afterwards? You're going to go back to London? Are you being invited, wined and dined around the world?
I've been offered a lot of shags by a lot of men. I might take them up on that.
Nice.
You might.
That's
a nice subject for your next show.
That's why I'm doing it. I need some new material.
Like Kerry Mark's doing the one about getting married.
Has he got married? Did somebody want to marry him?
I don't know. Somebody proposed marriage to me yesterday, though, and he was sitting in the cab, and I just walked in and I see someone approach me without even doing a show about it. So I don't think he has got close by the expression on his face. And Jess, what about you? What's your reason for being here?
I'm a reviewer for a festival paper, mainly looking at comedy and dance, physical theatre, music and theatre.
And your background is?
My background, I'm a student. My background is media.
And your mum has been trying to turn you into an actress for years.
Yeah, actually, I had quite a funny conversation before I came here. She said, how's the reviewing going? So my mum's in charge of sort of drama in Norfolk, and she's always been trying to force me on the stage, which I wouldn't particularly have minded, but because she was my mum and she wanted me to go on the stage, I always rebelled and said, I hate theatre. Exactly. I spoke to her on the thing today, I was saying, yeah, actually, I managed to get myself into a show by accident. And she was going, oh, brilliant, okay, great, I'll ring you tomorrow about it. She rang me this morning. So, yeah, are you ready for the show? I was like, well, I suppose so, yeah. She goes, right, now, what we need to do is we need to get you in character. Who are you playing? I was like, oh, I've been in Edinburgh for 3 weeks. I'm not an actress. I'm just on this show. She goes, oh, right, okay, so what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm being myself. She went, okay, so what as? I was like, as a reviewer. She goes, right, so that's it. We really need to focus. Really imagine that you are a professional reviewer. I was like, Mom,
oh,
I am.
Okay.
She was like, oh, yeah, of course, but, you know, like, professional. I was like, okay.
Yeah, thanks,
so my mum will be glad. I'm sitting on stage.
And you're trying to get in touch with the inner you, which is what some comics attempt to do with relative degrees of success.
And alcohol.
And alcohol. Or not, as the case may be. So, great, and I'm Sabrina George, and I've got a show here at 7:10 called Cram Comedy and Me, which some of you might have heard about.
How's that been doing?
Oh, very small houses, Shazir. Good reviews in small houses.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. And I do my own tacking.
I don't think that look will come out on the podcast. That was a very telling face there.
Bitter. Bitter. Yeah. So, the next question is, Julia, Beth, it's sort of, kind of an interesting one. When did you take the first action rather than thinking about being a comic? What was the pivotal point that got you to actually make that change?
I was, a bouncer. For a long time, and we used to have this thing where at the end of each night you would sit around staffies and just have a few drinks and wind down, and I found myself like retelling a story. And then
a
staffie is literally all the staff,
out.
All the bar staff, all the bouncers. You get rid of all the punters, and just like the core people that work there are sitting around just chatting, having a few drinks. and I found myself retelling stories. And then I found myself, instead of talking to the person beside me, all of a sudden the whole table would be listening, and the guys at work kept going, you should give that a go, you should go and give stand-up comedy a go. Yeah, but I'm telling stories about people getting beaten up, that's not particularly funny. As it turns out, crowds quite like their beating up stories, which you wouldn't imagine, but they do, which is fantastic. But I was then out with one of the barmen in a blues club, getting quite drunk. There was a big poster for a national competition in Australia, and I decided to go home and look it up on the internet. And I was drunk enough that I entered the competition via the web. And the next morning, when the lady from the office rang me to tell me I was on in 2 weeks and I had to have 5 minutes ready, I'd forgotten that I'd done it.
So you had no material ready when you actually applied? You had no
nothing.
Idea what you were going in for, really?
I was sure, because it had already started, I was sure that I would be in the next year's heats. And so when she called me, I went, "Hi, it's Kate here from Access Entertainment. We got your email overnight and... you're on in 2 weeks, I hope you've got 5 minutes ready." And I just went, "Ah!" And luckily, didn't know enough about the industry, didn't have any friends that were comedians, didn't know enough to know how big a trouble I just got myself into. So I just kind of went, "Oh, okay then." And won my heat on the night, got through to like the national finals and stuff, and it was a lot of fun. So from then, it was just, I was hooked. Addicted to the adrenaline room.
It was?
Yeah.
Right, and you stopped being a bouncer?
Yeah.
Did they sort of, like, overhang each other for a while?
Oh, for a while I was doing both. But I had been a bouncer for about 10 years and had never really got hurt, because I'd always kind of gone running straight in there going, "It doesn't matter if I get hurt, I'll be fine." And it's when you hesitate that you're actually going to get really injured. And there came a point where I went, "Well, if I get my jaw broken, I can't do stand-up comedy anymore." And so I figured, as a 27, 28-year-old woman, it's probably a good idea not to get your jaw broken, and comedy was probably a better way to go. So I pulled back from the bouncing. I had a day job as well as an accountant, so they didn't really go together. So I did go, "Right, okay. Instead of having three jobs, being accounting, bouncing and stand-up comedy, I'll go to accounting and stand-up comedy, and now it's just stand-up comedy."
Because so. Yeah, I ran the door on a few clubs a night in New York, and I had a very English attitude, which is what they hired me for. In New York, anybody could get into clubs, and I just looked down and I'd say, "With those trainers..." And they, the club loved the accent and the attitude, but I had no idea that what I was saying came across as incredibly rude and unpleasant and stuck up and snobbish, which is what they wanted. But the more I did it, the more they sort of hired me, which is great. But the punters were really, really upset.
Yes, I'm surprised you didn't get stabbed.
Well, the reason I didn't get stabbed is because I had four of the largest Puerto Ricans you've ever seen. They were sort of 7 foot guys, and they were the ones that gradually trained me on how to actually change my body language and slightly change my approach,
yeah,
that I could actually stop people from coming in, but not in quite as such an antagonistic manner.
Without having to look over your shoulder every night when you left the club.
Exactly, sort of leaving with a posse of these guys got a bit inconvenient.
Bless my dad, when I had a gig in Bethnal Green in London, which is quite a rough area, and my dad said, "I hope some of the comics walked you to the tube station." I was trying to explain comics in London to my dad, and I was just going, "Dad, if they'd walked me to the tube station, I would have to walk them back to the club." I was just, no. He just didn't get it that, you know, guy comics over here tend to be kind of, "Hey, little guys that are all like very entertaining and very funny." Don't really, because in Australia, most guys are sort of big, burly blokes.
But that's how it will come on to later, is the violence meted out to comics. Because that's what I share, is I've now got a degree of training in learning to dissipate the situation rather than exacerbate it.
Yeah.
When I started, if I'd gone how I did when I started in New York, it would have been in real trouble. Shazia, what was your pivotal moment, darling?
Well, when I became a comic.
When you made the difference between thinking about it and...
I never thought. It was an accident, really. It was an accident. I went to try out some material one night, and then I just carried on doing it. I never planned to be a comedian. I know, honestly, I never did. I was a teacher at the time, which I hated, and they hated me. And it was an accident. I never planned to be a comic.
So still, what was the moment? The accident moment. Let's hear more about the accident.
I think I just went to do one, I went to Pear-Shaped in, this club is the worst club. It's called the second worst comedy club in Great Britain.
And the previous one was the one he used to run.
I know.
They run one in Sydney, Australia. It's exactly the same.
It is so bad that it's good.
Exactly.
You know,
that's exactly right.
These guys were on the show last time.
Yep. he's the main prime mover. He's coming on next week. Later in the week.
It's the worst comedy club in the world, and I just went on and tried out some material there. And it didn't matter because it was so bad. And there was only like a few people in the audience, but I loved it, and then I just carried on.
Did you carry on with much effort, or did you just like chill out? And
I think I put in a lot of effort. Because when I realised, I didn't know, you know, I didn't really know what stand-up comedy was when I was first started doing it. Then I think I realised that, oh, you can say what you want to say, and you can have the power to write what you want to write, and people will listen to you. And then I started putting in a lot of effort.
A lot of effort in, and that's why I've now got sell-out shows wherever you go. Jess, what about you?
What was excellent as well. I wanted to work in TV. I chose to do work experience on the Trisha Show, which put me off TV because I was a bit of a
bouncer. Can we backtrack a bit? How did you get from just falling into working on the Trisha Show?
I lived in Norwich and it was the only show we had. So, yeah, I applied to Anglia and got into Trisha and I thought it was quite easy to get in there. And I wasn't sure why it was so easy. And I realised...
You found out why.
Yeah, I was actually a bit of a bouncer and I used to have to sort of sit in the changing rooms and just stop part A, meeting part B in the toilets because he was going to slit her throat and like, it all got a bit crazy, but I was a bouncer basically. And I decided that I didn't want to do stuff like that. So I started doing location work and decided I wanted to do something creative. I wanted to do camera work. So I entered doing camera work and realised I can actually hold the cameras. They're huge, and you have to carry them around like 12 hours a day with all your bags and the tripods and be a bit of a pack horse. So I kind of gave up on that one. And then in the meantime, I'd got some work experience with sort of the leading regional paper in Norwich. And it's a big paper. Anyway, and I really didn't want to do it. I was like, oh, you know, I'd rather do something else. I really don't want to do it. It's a complete waste of time. I'd have to pay for car parking, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I went there. And I was completely thrown in at the deep end because basically they didn't have anybody else because everyone had called in sick. They had no reporters. So they sent me with a notebook and kind of pushed me out the door and said, go turn up there and talk to some old men about the war, which I didn't do very well either.
Oh, wow.
Because these men, they did like me, but I sort of saying, you know, tell me about the war. And they're saying, oh, they were going on for about 20 minutes. And I sort of thought I should get my facts straight. So I said, and which war was this? And they were like, which one do you think it was? World War I or World War II? And I was just like, look, I'm going to be brutally honest. I don't have a clue when the wars were. And they were just like, right. Anyway, so I thought, right. Before then, I'd always been doing fillers. So I thought, I'll just write masses and they can cut it down into a filler. And the next day I went to work and it was on the billboard with like all these photographs. And I've got like the centre page spread and stuff, and they were really desperate for reporters, clearly. And by the end of the week, I had the front page.
Wow.
And got offered a job and said, sorry, I can't, I'm at university doing media. When they kind of laughed and said, that's sweet, but you know, do you want a job or not? I was like, I can't, I've got to finish my degree, which they snuffed out a bit, media studies, but never mind. And then I just did loads more work experience on regional papers, writing about village fates and stuff like that, so it really wasn't very exciting. Got an email around from the paper I'm working for here, saying, come and work in Edinburgh. And I did it a bit last year, but with TV, but only for a week, and completely just loved the atmosphere of Edinburgh, and didn't think there was any way I was going to get the job. I didn't realise they didn't pay you, which is probably why it's so easy to get the job. But yeah, no, it's been amazing, so I just got into reviewing that way, through an email.
And you're reviewing most areas, not
yeah,
just comedy?
Yeah, actually, no. I mean, comedy, physical theatre, and a bit of music, jazz, normally. But they're my main sort of things. But yeah, comedy, theatre.
And had you seen any comedy before you came up?
Not particularly. I've always avoided theatres. This is the odd thing. Because of my mum, just to prove a point, I've always kind of snuffed at going to shows and I've always been a bit claustrophobic and I've hated being in audiences. And so it's just really bizarre that I'm doing it. So no, I'd always avoided them like the plague. And then recently I've seen like 40 shows or something in three weeks.
Dear.
It's been a bit intense, but it's been really good. So it's a bit
you're
going to
be battle weary at the end of this.
Mm.
Someone's going to take a ticket, you're going to punch them in the face, going, enough of these shows!
No, I'm like that really bad. I'm walking down the Royal Mile, I just want to punch whoever's in front of me.
Yeah.
So they're going too slowly, I'm in a rush. It's just a nightmare. But no, it's really good.
And do you think you're going to see more comedy or theatre now?
Yeah, no, I don't know how I'm going to go chilled. Back from Brighton. We've got Comedia, which is like a really good comedy place, and quite a lot of the comedians I've seen here have sort of mentioned Comedia to me, and I feel like a bit of an idiot being a comedy reviewer. And they're saying, have you been to Comedia? And it's opposite my house. I'm like, no, I've never actually been there. So I think I'm going to have to start going at least once a week, start seeing some shows now.
It's quite a spacious venue. You won't get tutorial, don't they? I've done it, you've done it, have you? Have you done it?
No, it's one of those, I only got a car recently to get out of London, so since then I've been doing Birmingham and Manchester and Plymouth and Exeter and Torquay and you name it, I'm all over the shop. So
it's Brighton.
Brighton's next, yeah. Grr.
See ya.
Really next. The next question, which I don't know whether it applies to Jazz, but well, I suppose it does really, but I'll ask Shazia first because what did you bring the changes? When you're sort of doing your, let's talk about me. When the question is,
let's talk about me.
The My question show. Is like, who do you most admire, or whose sort of work would you like to have written? And I find it depends on each day. Richard Pryor, I think, is phenomenal. Mae West, I think, is extraordinary. Very little known about her. Contemporary versions, I think French and Saunders are fantastic. And I'm not like, even though I look a bit like Dawn French, I'm nothing like them as a performer or as a writer. But I just think, wow, I would love to have written some of those Dawn French sketches or some of those fantastic ones. Dorothy Parker again, you just think, wow, how amazing. And then I look out at some of the audiences I have to deal with and I just think, they all just wouldn't appreciate it. So I might as well go back to the sort of bog standard, the difference between men and women, which I don't actually do at all, but there is that sort of pull between that stuff that I really like and respect and would love to do and know that I really haven't got an audience a lot of the time that's going to work with that. So what's your feeling around that? Who would you like to have, what would you like to have written or performed?
Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor.
Yeah, I'd like to have worked with him as well, been in his films. He's great. He was amazing.
And does that change from day to day? Or are other
yeah,
people
I think so. Because I like Joan Rivers as well. I think she's great. And so I would have liked to have done some of her work. I still can't steal some of it. And Woody Allen. I love Woody Allen. And I'd like to work with him. It does change, though, from day to day.
But Richard Pryor.
Yeah, but Richard Pryor would always be number one.
Yeah. And why is that for you?
He's just great. Great performer. He was honest. He was truthful. He was original. He was groundbreaking.
And that's you or?
No, not me. Yet.
Yet.
Well, also, then. Lenny Bruce. I think anything that Lenny Bruce did, anything that any comic does, Lenny Bruce did it first. You know, so I think that he was even better.
Fantastic. I
grew up watching Dave Allen and people like that, because in Australia we didn't make a lot of our own TV, so we had either English comedy or American comedy. I used to really enjoy watching like old Bob Hope specials, watching his performance ability. I know he had a team of writers for him, but his ability to like command and you know, if there were 10 people in the audience, or like 4,000, it was quite amazing. Watch Dave Allen these days. I'm an enormous Henry Rollins fan. He's an American punk singer slash, wouldn't call him a stand-up comedian. He does like spoken
words.
And like, that's my comedy is more storytelling based, and like stuff that's actually happened to me based, rather than, oh, cats and dogs, aren't they different type stuff. I like to generalise on that, whoa, wacky kind of thing. But so I really, really like, Rollins is also an author, and his writing is really inspiring as well. So, depending on what mood I'm in, there's something probably either really loud punk rock music for me to listen to, depending on what mood I'm in, or I'm in one of the darker moods, there's a book for me to read, or if I'm in just a lighter mood, I can sit down and watch some of his stand-up stuff. So he's a man for all occasions for me.
Mm.
Really good stuff, and he's been touring for 22 years. So. Because we don't really have that many people that we can look at and go, yep, you've been in the industry forever. Everyone tends to get offered some big event.
As you mean, Australian or woman or both?
As both, actually.
Yeah.
I was given a book, and it was really funny that I found it. For my 16th birthday, my friends at school all pitched in and bought me a book on women in stand-up comedy. And it had never occurred to me to do stand-up comedy when I was 16, so it's a bit of a surprise that they bought me this book. And I found it when I was back in Australia in March. And they'd all written it going, hey, hopefully we'll see you in here one day. And reading it, I was like, oh, everyone else realised I was going to be a comedian way before I did. So I was 25, 26, maybe 27 when I took it up. From 16 to, I was like, oh, very nice. But I was going through the list and they had lists of women from the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s of women in comedy in Australia. And there were maybe three women from the 90s that still perform regularly.
Mm.
And if I was to compare that with the men list from the 90s, there would easily be 50%.
Mm.
And so I was kind of going 3 out of 18 compared to, you know, your 9, probably 10 out of 18.
Mm.
I then started walking around going, well, why don't women stay in the touring, the travelling, the performing every night type thing? And I couldn't decide whether it was family-based or we were presented with more media opportunities or... Because I was looking at the women in this list, I'm like, well, she's, you know, she writes for TV now, this woman, you know, is a journalist now, this woman is like a director of a festival now, this woman's blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of, I couldn't work out whether it was just the grind of touring, because it takes a bit out of you to be like travelling around gigging every night in a different country or state or territory or wherever you're touring around. So I couldn't quite work out whether it was such a grind and having a family makes that really quite hard, or that there were more opportunities sort of awarded to once you got to a high point of your career, whether you then were, you know, able to pick other jobs in other forms of art.
Mm.
So I never came to a decision on that. I just went, oh, isn't that unusual?
That's a point to be taken on board. What about you, Jess? Who would you like to be writing-wise or media-wise? Not your mother, obviously. You're not an actress.
No.
Will she be listening to this at any point, is it?
Yeah, well, she keeps asking me where she can listen to it, and I go, I don't know, Mum, I don't know. What time does it start? I don't know. No one in particular I would want to be. There's papers I would like to write for, although it's difficult. Obviously, I'd like to write for a big national paper, but I find them so boring, many of them, and political, and they hold back a lot, and I prefer, I know things like student media, obviously I don't want to write student media forever, but you can kind of be a lot more original and say exactly what you think, although I don't actually write for my student paper, because you either have to sleep with the editor or be a political activist to get any space on that paper.
That's what you do in the real world
as well. That's good training, that is.
You haven't seen the editor. I just like to, I definitely want to carry on with reviewing. I don't want to be anyone in particular. There aren't many.
Not a Julie Birchell or something like that.
Yeah.
She used to be a fantastic
Carrie Bradshaw. Yeah. No, I don't know. I just like to work for a renowned paper, but not be held back too much by
change it from the inside.
Politics and, I'm going to lead the way. I'm going to pioneer the papers. Yeah.
Do something different. Right, so the next question... Oh, God, I haven't got anybody to vote on who's been the most honest, have I? So on all the last rounds, Julia, who's been... Sorry, Julia, all of them. Has she been the most honest, in your opinion? Oh, look.
See, I never know when people think...
Third of the vote there, Julia.
Yeah, I don't know if that's truthful or he realises that I'm scarily a bouncer.
Yeah, I was going to say, he just thinks you're going to beat him up.
When people tell, oh, I really found that funny, did you? Or are you just afraid I'm going to punch him in the face if you say I wasn't? Never know.
Shazia Mazda. Oh, third of the vote. And Jess?
I haven't lied once. Guys.
Sorry,
start lying now.
You didn't fabricate it hard enough.
The next question, which is sort of following on from what Julia said, is what do you think? I think it's fair to start you with this, but I'll sort of give you a bit of thinking time. What do you think is holding you back in yourself, something within yourself or outside yourself? And I think there is a phenomenal amount of sexism in the world of that I work in stand-up comedy. And I also think that I find it within myself almost unbearable sometimes to be around some of the blokes. A lot of them are fabulous, but some of them, you just sit there, the thought of driving to Birmingham and back, listening to somebody. Not only themselves, but just one little tiny part of their anatomy, which probably doesn't work that often. Two nights ago, I was having a relatively civilised conversation with two male comics from North America about art or something. It took 2 minutes for three other comics to come in to the subject to change to how often have you, what they call, dumped a load in the sink in your hotel, and they started notching up things. And I just sat there just listening to this, and it sort of went louder and more raucous, and then one of them stopped and said, oh, Sabrina, are you terribly shocked? And I went, the subject matter so doesn't shock me. What shocks me is that you still find this funny. And then luckily, I could walk away, do you know what I mean? And I was actually around that conversation for 5 minutes, but I knew that that could have lasted all the way from Aberdeen and back. Do you know, and that's the thought that made it so utterly depressing. Being in the green room with people like that, you just think, if one bloke had to share a trip backwards and forwards whilst gigging with three or four women all the time. They might have a hint of what it's like to be so outside your own comfort zone all the time. So that's one of the things that I internally find very difficult to deal with and externally find very difficult to deal with. I'm a speciality act on the bill. We've already got one woman. Women can't do emceeing. That's my particular area that I like doing. So that's what I would say is holding externally and internally me back in a nutshell. I could go on about it for much longer, but I shan't. Have I given you enough thinking time?
Yeah,
just?
Okay. I find it very difficult to deal with day in, day out media whores and people who, I had a chat with you about it last time. I don't, particularly people on stage and people in the acting industry, I never know when they are telling the truth. And when they realise if you're a reviewer and they'll come and hassle you and they'll pretend to be the nicest people in the world and they'll pay you so much attention. And you might even start to be like, yeah, they're really nice people. And then something will click and you're like, hang on, you're a reviewer. And I find it very difficult to deal with the pretense of actor types. It might not even be there, it might be in my head. But there's a lot of people who will treat you in a certain way because they think they can get something from you. I find that quite difficult to deal with.
Would it bother you if someone had schmoozed you, you reviewed their show, didn't give them the best review, and then they disliked you afterwards?
It wouldn't bother me because I probably wouldn't feel... it would annoy me a bit, but I'm aware that they're doing it all the time, and at the same time I wouldn't be overly cut up because I thought I was going to be their best friend. I mean, it's not like I feel the need to really make connections with all these people, but I've been to a couple of venues lately where I've given people bad reviews and they've just been rude. And do you know what? If you're going to invite people to review your show, if you want to pay me, I'll write you a good review. You know, if you want to give me £1,000, I'll say you're wonderful. But if you want an honest review, which will actually help you, I will give you one. But don't moan. Do you know what I mean? And I can't handle people that want a reviewer to come and review a bad show and to lie through their teeth about it, because there's no point. They might as well not give press allocation if it's a bad show, really.
They might could buy good reviews.
Me?
If I know that.
Freelance.
Oh, God, you didn't know that.
No, I only could buy good reviews.
I was joking. I'm in so much trouble.
No, but you
now.
Can.
I'm sure you can, yes. An area I might try and get into next. But, you know, I just mean, I think, as far as I'm concerned, I like being honest. And when I'm writing a review, as stupid as it may sound, I'm not just writing it for like the audience to say, you know, go and see this, you'll like it. I'm also kind of giving feedback to companies who, a lot of companies do just want feedback and to get better and better. And if I don't give them the honest feedback, they're not going to get any better. So I don't like it and they don't appreciate honesty.
Well, no, because you're the sort of like, the reviewers, critics are sort of like the estate agents of the media world, aren't they? They're universally disliked but universally pandered to. It's a very sort of odd thing and you have to develop. And there's certainly one woman on this thing who I find her incredibly funny, very perceptive, and bloody harsh if she doesn't like something. But, God, the amount of comics that get on stage and have a go about what she's written about them. And yet if she gives a good one, they really blow the trumpet about it. Oh, so-and-so's given me a fantastic review. It's a really odd dynamic. Because I think, I mean, there are reviewers like anybody else who can be bought or who are lazy or who patently don't know their subject.
It's so easy to give someone 3 stars and say it was alright. Do you know what I mean? But I've been giving 1s and 5s and I'm just going to be honest, if something's awful, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it is. But yeah, I know a lot of people will just say, yeah, you know, it's okay, not my cup of tea, you might like it. And that doesn't help anyone, really. So.
What's yours? What about you, Shazzy?
What was the question?
I've forgotten what.
Yeah, I forgot what it was.
Is there anything external or internal that thinks you stopping moving forward? How do you cope
loads
with it?
Of things. I don't know how I cope with it, but loads of things in moving forward. Sometimes I think, I never think, oh, I'm a woman. I never think that. I just think we're all comics together. Oh, that's how I think. We're all comics together. And then I think, oh, you know, why is, it's not, you know, I think all comics think like this, so why is he getting that gig and I'm not? Why did he get 5 stars? That show's shit and I only got 3. Why, you know, and then I always think, there. For me, it's different for me because I feel the press are a bit harsh on me because, you know, I got a lot of publicity before I became good at stand-up. And so they like to stick the knife in a bit. And because I've got a bit of a profile, they like to stick the knife in a bit. And...
Who's it, they? You mean
the press?
Promoter, public?
Well, not all the press, but a lot of the press.
Okay.
I always think, you know, they came to see my show and I know they thought it was great, but if it was anybody else, they would have given it 5 stars. But because it was me, they're giving it 3. I feel that. I feel like I have to work twice as hard as everyone else.
And you do?
I do, yeah.
You do. So, you think there is a degree of external reasons why you...
People have their own reasons, yeah. And there's a lot of jealousy in this business. A lot of bitterness. You know, other comics who feel like they should have achieved more for the time they've been going. And then they see somebody else who hasn't been going as long and who's a bit more successful. And there's a lot of bitterness and jealousy.
And how do you deal with that?
I work harder.
Smile on her face. Is there anything internal you think that's stopping you moving forward?
Maybe. Yeah, there is. I think it takes a long time. I think it's hard for women to be really open on stage and to be really honest because it's so vulnerable. And I think that takes a long time to develop. Or to have the confidence to come out and say certain things that I wouldn't normally say. Because I'm in a vulnerable position.
Now, one of the things that I also find in going into that area is this whole thing of language and actually talking about something vulnerable and honest, and your audience is not people that you would normally mix with, i.e. a lot of blokes, a lot of very drunk blokes, late at night. They just want to have fun and they want you to just go back to how much shit have you left in the sink in the hotel or whatever it was, and you're sort of going, actually I want to talk about some really erudite thought I had about some advertising product on soap or something, and they're just looking at you going, shut up, move on. So there is an area where I think also about how we have to communicate what we want that meets each side halfway, really. You've got to sort of work with the audience that you've got, and you've got to try and be honest with what you are, and sometimes those really won't mix, and sometimes they mix brilliantly, and sometimes it's a halfway house. There's another learning curve in the whole process. What about you, Julia?
I have always done... I've done a lot of different jobs, and I've always done mostly male-dominated jobs. So it's never really occurred to me to divide... Like, when I was a bouncer, I was just a bouncer. I wasn't the token woman bouncer. I was just one of the boys. I used to drive garbage trucks, and I was always the only woman there, but I never considered myself the only woman there. All the accountancy firms that I worked for were pretty much male-dominated. And so it's never... it's never occurred to me to sort of go, oh, dear, I have to work harder because I'm a chick or anything like that. I just kind of get in there and do it. And I do find, although there are some factors that it works against you, there are equally, I do a lot of acting and you pour yourself out for ads and stuff like that. And when it comes to competition-wise, I might go up against 4 or 5 other chick comics for the part, whereas the guy comics I know go up against sort of 80 or 90 other comics. So on one hand, promoters can be more hesitant to book women. On the other hand, once you start to make a name for yourself, I think it gets a lot easier because your profile gets out there a lot quicker. So I think it's just sort of sussing out the rules of the game and playing them to your advantage type thing. But it does mean you've got to be on your marketing feet all the time. You've got to go, right, I can work this, I can do that. One of the nicest things that happened about a month ago, I went to Manchester to do a gig, and I went with Sarah Bonetto, one of the comics from London. We drove up there, and when we got there, Joe Caulfield was the headliner. And I try not to do all women bills that are promoted as it's a chicks night just for the ladies, because I find that demeaning to us, that we're going, we need to have a ladies night because we can't actually cut it with the boys. So it's I try not to, and I see why they're there, and I respect anyone who does them, but they're not for me. And so I said to the promoter, look, I didn't know this was going to be, you know, an all-women bill. And he said, I actually didn't mean it to be. It just, that's how it worked out. And it's the first time in the 3 years that I've been going that I actually was on a bill that it just, as it just happened, there just happened to be 3 women that were booked. And I went, oh, that's a bit of a turn. That really was. That made me sort of stop and go, wow. No, who would have imagined that happened? But I very regularly get, after the show, now, I don't normally like chick comics, but I really liked that. And I do go, yeah, well, that's kind of a compliment, but I don't really know how you can lump all chick comics into one area. Like, I've seen so many male comics, some of them are shit, some of them are good, some of them are fantastic, some of them are so offensive you want to jump up there and punch them in the face. How you can just go, yeah, I like men comics. Like, it's a ridiculous idea.
Yeah, but
you
women, when the audience is full of women and there's male comics on stage, regardless of whether those male comics are funny or not, if a woman in the audience fancies that male comic, he's brilliant. He's hilarious. Oh my God, he's so funny. It's a part of that sexual thing where women fancy male comics and they've got loads of groupies and everybody's laughing at whatever they say, regardless of whether it's funny. Whereas blokes don't sit in the audience and go, God, I really fancy her. She's hilarious. That never happens to women in return.
No, that's a fair point. I don't know that I would want someone laughing at me just because they thought I was going to get my tits out at the end of the gig, though. I think I'd rather...
I don't think they'll do anyway.
I think I'd rather a more genuine, honest laugh than a, oh, look at her, get her rack out type thing. I was really quite lucky in that when I was a bouncer, I used to do a lot of band tours and I had to, like, bodyguard the band an awful lot. So I got to sit back and watch the entertainment industry from, like, a stealthy position of going, right, this is how managers and promoters treat the talent. This is what they say when they're in their presence. This is what they say when they're not in their presence. This is how groupies behave. This is how fickle people can be. This is how easily, you know, your crowd can turn on you. And I honestly believe success in any of the entertainment sort of industries is about 10% actual talent. Probably 40% just genuine hard work. I would say probably 40% not being a wanker. just stand by your
word.
I'm
not so sure.
No, it's just, no, excuse me, what I've really enjoyed watching over the years is, you know, the guys you were talking about with the, why aren't I getting that gig and who's that and blah, 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 they just self-destruct, they drive themselves mad with their insecurities in the end, do actually, man or woman. Yeah, you do, you just take yourself out, and I've got to watch that over the years through both the music industry and the comedy industry, so it's every time I see one of those, and there's an awful lot of them around just going, how did you get that? How did you hear about that audition? What happened there? Why did you get that? Did you get that because you're a woman? You're like, no, I just hit me at the groundwork hard type thing. And I really do genuinely go, I'm like, the timer is set on you. You've got about 5 years before you either end up in a mental home or you know, we're going to find you on a bridge that you jump at some point. Because they will, like, they'll self-implode. And it's luckily I got to watch that for the first 10 years. So I really do have that just inbuilt confidence that just go, like, pick your own path, go about it, be a little bit noble. Don't backstab, just be nice, work hard, do what you genuinely think is honest, and it'll come to you, you know, in its own sweet time, because when these, I don't mean to say guys, but when usually it is guys that have, like, just got to where they are through bluff and just kind of that sheer, yeah, look at me, I'm doing that, you're not funny, I deserve that position, it's a short-lived stardom, and when they fall, they really fall hard. Whereas I'd much prefer to just build, gently, and then kind of...
Be in it for the long haul.
Yeah, very much so.
But there's still 10% missing from your
breakdown. That's just sheer luck.
Sheer luck.
I really do, just being in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time.
So do you think there's anything that... Well, I don't know whether you want to talk about it, anything within yourself that's stopping you moving forward, the thing that you feel you need to work on more?
I am really happy with my progress so far. I had to be careful because there's not a lot of women comics in Australia who... go on to be quite successful before they find a job, like a well-paid job in the media where they're not sort of in front of the camera. Once you start to make progress, you really become, like you were saying, the downfall is that you didn't get to work on your craft before the media picked up on you. I was aware of the fact that if you get a little bit too good too quick, then they'll just jump on you and you'll be under the spotlight. And equally, if you haven't gone far enough in a couple of years, everyone just writes you off going, well, I've seen your act now and I don't want to see it, so I'm always mindful of moving along at a steady progressive path, not going too quick to draw attention, and but still making sure I'm moving forward. So I'm all about the stealth, do it nice and quietly, build on my craft, just it's all of it. I really am in it for the long haul, so it's just all about just building skills, building contacts, just constantly working on what I've got. But I've definitely seen quite a few comics where they show a spark and they're like, straight away, people are on them, and you're under the spotlight, and you're like, I've been doing comedy 6 months, don't be judging me like I've been doing it for 15 years. Like, I really, really feel for that kind of... that's a lot of pressure to be put on your early days. Because I remember the first year, I was just getting on stage terrified me. let alone getting on stage knowing that there was a reporter in the audience going, yeah, well, I don't really think I agree with you, and I'm going to tell the whole world what you just said, actually. that's a lot of pressure. Whereas I don't think I got reviewed in the first 2 years I was doing comedy. I don't think I had a reporter in the audience. But
sorry.
It's you're not the we won't beat you with a stick later. You're not the representative of we won't kill you. But in Australia, it's a lot of lots of pub gigs, lots of working it out in front of audiences. It's a lot more, if they don't like you in Australia, you're ducking glasses and ashtrays and stuff like that. Whereas over here, if they don't like you, they tend to just be very quiet and dismissive and then bitch about you later. So, you know, in Australia, you work your way up through like a really rough pub scene.
So what, how do you deal with, some of the other comments if you're in a situation of a car?
I lay down rules. we were just talking about this the other day, actually. Whenever I'm driving, one thing I can't handle, and it happens so often, as soon as you get in the car, right, it's my car, few rules. First of all, no one mentions the Perrier. You mention the Perrier, you're walking, essentially. I'm not having, and I lay down rules of what I'm not having chatted about in the car. And what I do is if every now and then you'll just get someone who's so self-obsessed that they cannot actually step outside themselves. And I'm thinking of...
You leave them on the lay-by.
Just a few, but what I do is then go, well, my passion is music. I love listening to music. So if you have to wank on about yourself, so tell me what kind of music do you like? And so, and I've only met one comic who shall remain nameless who somehow managed to get what sort of music do you like back around to talking about his Edinburgh show. It was an absolute skill because everybody else, you go, so what kind of music do you like? Because if we have to listen to you talk about yourself, make it something that I want to know about. You know, maybe there's a band I've never heard of, or maybe there's a version of a song that I don't know about or something like that. Then I normally go, okay, he's still talking about himself, he's enjoying himself, but I'm learning something as well. And there's only been one comic that still managed somehow to just manipulate the conversation back around to... me, my Edinburgh show, me, my numbers, la 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 la, and I was just like, oh. So yeah.
Give it a break. I came back from Oxford doing a gig with an Australian comic who's now living here, who shall remain nameless, and he was an opera singer in his past life, which is an area I used to work in, and I spent the whole thing trying to get him to talk about opera, and it kept on coming back to who he'd fucked, how good he was, how bad he was. And by the way, that role that you did in Sydney Opera House, and he'd go, yeah, anyway, and it would come back to me. And he was so close to being left by the lay-by, and I got to a point where I said, you don't shut up about this, I'm going to leave you by the lay-by. And he just turned to me and he said, sorry, I didn't offer you, do you want oral sex?
Oh my God!
That was his response. And I just kept driving this thinking, no one would believe this conversation.
See, I've had a mate driving, one of the comics driving back, where one of the guy comics was talking about his cock so much, he just decided to get it out.
Oof.
And I said, what did you do? And she said, I told him to put it away. I'm like, no, pull over, get out of my car. Like, just like you would train a dog by, you know, rubbing its nose in what it shouldn't have done. You've got to walk back from Birmingham. I reckon next time you go to flash your cock at someone, you might think about it a little bit more clearly.
Why do they do that?
I have no, I think he's just a bit mental.
There's a lot of it about them.
Yeah, there's a lot of, we're in the industry for it, Jesus.
Yeah.
I've seen so much genitalia this week in shows. A lot of the shows have all around it, actually.
Yeah. Puppetry the penis, fair enough. That's
no,
on the
didn't
pitch.
Even see that.
I was going to say, that's on the poster. You know you're going to see genitalia there, but when occasionally you just go, oh, you've got your testicles out, good work, okay. Wasn't expecting it, really don't know what the comic value is there in the audience, but okay.
So do you think if there was some sort of, not legislation, but something that, where there was an, not about sex, but where literally every gig was 50-50, you intended to work with as many women as you did men, and that was a perpetual state of affairs, do you think that would make, for instance, the dropout rate that you were talking about earlier less? Because that's my thing. I mean, Australia, I did Melbourne Festival last year and I was absolutely staggered when I really let it sink in the amount of touring an Australian is touring an Australian act has to do. I mean, it's 4.5 hours flying time across the continent. I mean, people disappear off the planet for 3-4 months to do, and that's quite a small tour.
I'm a Sydney comic, so I was on like a 3 month sort of roster where you would do Queensland for a month, New South Wales for a month, Victoria for a month. That still leaves the rest of the country. That's only sort of one coast of the country, but we really do. I drive a lot of K's in Australia.
And if you're stuck with a bunch of comics you're not too thrilled with, that must also have an impact on how you view touring year after year.
But I'm really lucky in that I've got enough confidence in myself to go, you know what, I don't want to take that tour. I don't say yes to every gig. I go, no, they're a pack of wankers, and there's just, I will end up punching somebody and there will be a lawsuit, and I know that's what's going to happen, so I'm more than happy to go, no, I'm not going to go on that tour. So I do tend to pick them because I think everyone underestimates being in each other's space for such a long amount of time. If there's even one issue, it's going to come to a head, and it's probably going to end in tears. And I do tend to be a bit violent, so I just, you know, you don't want to be known as, she's the chick that knocked out the, you know, the headliner's teeth on the third day. Like, you don't want to be known like that. So I pick my tours.
You just pull out of it.
I'll just decline and say thanks, but no.
Right. So I mean, certainly in this country, I think that has an impact on the why women comics don't continue. I mean, Jenny Eclair tells this fantastic story of doing a gig, I think it was Aberdeen, Glasgow, something like that, and people wanted to knife her and bottle her. As for no particular reason, she was just there, I think. I don't know if it was a personal issue. But she left the gig and she had to get to the train station and no one thought to walk her back or stuff.
That's right.
And, you know, she's slight. I'm sure in normal circumstances she could have ended it, but she's a slight woman, you know, and it does have an impact, I think. And she did a tour, was it last year? You worked with her on a bit of it. But it's unusual to be able to keep going for that length of time before you just go, nah. I'll accept the beer commercial.
I did Croatia last year, and it never occurred to me. I did all my research about unemployment rates and what they imported and exported so that I'd get a feel for what was going on, and then I get up on stage and you've got to do 2 20-minute sets in the night. Now, everybody in the room spoke about 8 languages, and as an Australian, I barely speak English properly, right? So I felt like a complete dumbass that everyone else spoke 1,000 languages and I have just mastered my own. And so I get up there and I start talking about I'm quite rude. So I'm up there swearing away and talking about cocks and blah, 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 and bouncers and violence and blah, blah. And I look out at the audience and the women are laughing in like an almost hysterical way, like a cathartic laugh. And the men are just like stunned mullets. Like every guy in the audience is just arms at side, jaw, oh my God. And I started to laugh while I was on stage because sexual politics never occurred to me. It's Croatia. It's an Eastern Bloc country. Where women don't even say those things, let alone saying them on stage. I found out later I was the second female comic they'd ever had. And I'm up there going, blah, 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 blah. And I've actually called them on it, just going, oh my God, look at you guys. You are so stunned. And I saw a guy nudge another bloke and go, blah, 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 blah. And I said to him, I don't even speak Croatian, but I know you just said, oh my fucking God, did she say that? He went, yeah, that is what I said. And about minute 8 into my first 20, the older guy started to go, and laugh. The women are still laughing really heartily. The older guys are laughing at about minute 12 of my first 20. The younger guys who were really like, I'm not going to go for this, started to like look at their elders that were laughing, looking at their girlfriends and mothers that were laughing and kind of went, oh, okay. So there was a bit of a battle. Like the first 15 was a real battle. So I really enjoyed the last 5 of the first set, and then the next 20 was absolutely beautiful. I really, really enjoyed it. But it just dawned on me while I was on stage, I was like, oh my God, I might have to fight my way out of this gig. I haven't had to do that for a while. This might actually be a start the car, we're going kind of gig. But it was absolutely amazing. I was surprised at myself for not thinking about that because I'd researched everything else. Yeah. But it just never occurred to me that women don't get up and go, cocks, whatever, yes, I fuck who I want, I do this and I do that, and blah, 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 blah. Never occurred to me. I'm like, come on, Wilson, do your recon. If you're going to do it properly.
Take on board sexual policy. One of the things I was going to, Jez, ask you, actually, no, you started the last one. I'll ask Shazia, opening question. No time to think about it. What's most surprised you about working as a comic? What preconceptions have you had really broken or things that really surprised you about working as a comic?
How nasty men can be when a woman gets successful. When a woman gets a bit of success, how bitter and nasty and horrible and jealous men can be. That's how much it surprised me. How they react, really.
Mm.
And just how nasty that they can be. When somebody gets a bit of success. I'm really shocked at, you know, how men can be like that. Because I think if you want to be successful, just work hard and you will be.
Because you got slapped around the face within a few months of starting in stand-up in Brick Lane, didn't you?
You're kidding me, someone slapped you. Oh my God.
It was 3, I think, isn't it? Jumped on stage.
You're kidding me.
Oh, we've been through worse than that.
Oh my Lord.
But you had only, was it 6 months then or something? Or 9 months?
Yeah, it was about 6 months. But that shocks me about, you know, because I think you know, men are ambitious. You know, every comic is ambitious. You wouldn't be in this business if you didn't have no ambition. Nobody wants to be working the road for the rest of their life. Every comic has some ambition. They want to be rich. They want to be famous. They want loads of women after them. They want something, you know. Don't believe any comic that says, oh, I just do it because I love it and I like playing pear-shaped every week. That's rubbish. Every comic has ambition, but when a woman becomes more successful than them, they can't handle it. It's like a lot of male comics go out with female comics who are less successful than themselves because they are comfortable in that position. But for a male comic to go out with a female comic that is more successful than themselves, that rarely ever happens because they can't deal with that power thing.
The relationship usually comes to an end.
Yeah.
We were talking about that the other night, actually, with two male comics who were going out with female comics, and they were both saying that they found it very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Even the idea of their girlfriends becoming more successful than them, and they were very honest about it. And one of them, I think, actually would manage to bite the bullet, but the other one said he didn't think he would.
And also, they like to be critical of their girlfriend's material. Like, why are you doing that material? That's a bit embarrassing. And other male comics will say, oh, is that your girlfriend? Oh, you know, I don't like her material. And so that affects his ego.
Yeah.
But if a female is more successful than the male, it's very rare that they'd go out together. Unless they were about the same level.
So you're trying to find a comic less successful to go out with?
I'm not trying to find any comic.
I'm going to say, there's not that many. Probably an issue, really. There's not that many comics that I go out with, quite frankly.
A lot of male comics are scared of me.
And me.
I don't know. I assume. I've had a few instances in the last couple of nights drinking at the library where I'm, what? And I've apparently leaned too quickly. I get a flinch and I'm like, what'd you flinch for, you big silk? Nothing, I didn't flinch. You did. Big wuss.
And Jess, what surprised you most about, let's like focus on the comedy world as we're here, but like particularly over the last month.
The comedy world. do you know what? I can't predict. I thought I'd be able to predict which comedians I would like, which ones would be good, which ones would be normally going down the price index. I think the most expensive, the most well known. But I found so many top comedians who will remain unnamed that I've been to see. Not funny. But I'm aware people in the audience laugh because they're that comedian and because they must be missing something because they're really famous. So they must actually be funny, but they're just too stupid to understand it. And I've been sitting in the audience thinking, do I need, like, just, you know, have I got a sense of humour? Are they just really bad? And then I've gone to see some other comedians who aren't as famous, who are at smaller venues, and I found them so much funnier and more worthwhile of, well, not my money, but of going to see in my time. So, yeah, I found that really bizarre.
Mm.
And just in general, like I said, how fake people can be here. I found quite surprising. So I'm always finding I'm quite on edge with people, you know, or always kind of analysing them when I'm talking to them. But, yeah, the main things.
And what about in your industry in general when you came into being a media whore?
No, I'm not a recipient
of it. What sort of surprised you?
We got warned when we started not to see any plays by anyone we knew or might even slightly know because we could be biased and we just thought, no, we just wouldn't, you know, we've got enough, you know, sense, we believe we're good enough, we won't be biased. I went to see a play and I didn't realise to begin with that I knew the person whose play it was. Just didn't notice. I didn't even particularly know him. It's sort of a friend of a friend. And I came to write in a review and I realised I was name-dropping him in particular and I thought, actually, he wasn't that great. And I just ripped it up and rang the office. I was like, I'm really sorry, can you send someone else to go and schedule it? I really don't want to review it if I know them at all. And so that's been really awkward as well when you're reviewing something and someone comes up afterwards and tries to smooze you a bit and tries to have a drink with you and stuff like that. I found it quite... You have to... Just don't overestimate your own...
Bias.
Your bias as well. So I've just been avoiding all situations like that, like the plague, not trying to test myself or test my neutrality, so...
Because I think that's another element of something that I hadn't realised that I still find really hard. And those who know me don't know how unsuccessful I could be. Is sometimes with a group of people you cannot stand and you've got to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
Got to work with them.
It happens all the time.
Well, I mean, I think probably because I'm not as successful as you, I don't know. I do tend to get more and more surrounded by people I actually like or get on with quite easily. But some people, I just sit there. can't bear that I've got, and that has surprised me, the degree to which I have to force myself to cut their stuff out. Their schmoozing, their nonsense, their I'm fabulous, their, you know.
Something I found difficult since I've been here is like, I like space. And I found that going from sitting in one audience to another audience to walking on the Royal Mile and having posters shoved up your nose and people hassling you to getting home and sharing a house with certain other reviewers, and I've just found it all really intense and you just haven't got any space. So I found that quite awkward. Need a bit of distance from the whole festival. It's a bit of a bubble when you get here, I think.
Absolutely.
So sometimes you need to get out of it a bit. Disappear up to the top of the hill and sit there for an hour.
I schedule in non-festival activities for every festival, otherwise you get mental. And whether it's just going to a movie or going to see a band that's got nothing to do with the festival or going for a bushwalk, you actually have to schedule it in. Otherwise, you just get tropo.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest surprise?
I was really intimidated when I first started by so many acts. I would just go, oh my God, they're phenomenal. I'm never going to get to that stage. And I'm never going to be able to get out of this. And I'm still so surprised by how something as simple as just telling stories about what I've done in my time and just being fairly direct on stage. I've gone from being someone who was destined to be an accountant or a bouncer for the rest of time to I'm now living in the UK. I get to gig in places like Croatia and South Africa and stuff like that, and gig with people who were previously really intimidated me. But once you do more than one gig with them and you go, oh, I see, you think you're as crap as we all think we're as crap, or your fragile ego is as fragile as all the other egos and it's just a bit of good luck that you've had. Like, that kind of thing really surprised me. A, how far, it's just the most, it's so many opportunities. It completely blows my mind that some Sydney girl who grew up on the beaches now gets to travel the world. Not exactly hard work, a lot of fun, that kind of thing. And then the other side of it is that I used to watch a lot of comedy, people that I really looked up to, when you work with them and just kind of go, wow, you're, 15, 20 years down the track more than me and still slogging away at it every day, still just that kind of thing really surprised me. But it's actually quite reassuring to go, that's good, it's nice to know that you've got to keep at it, you've just got to keep working, which is lovely.
Fantastic. Quick raise hands. Julia, most honest. Shazia Mirza or Jessica Baldwin.
Yes.
Hey, third all round.